Hello, I'm Bruce Sowry. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. So, your mortgage is almost up for renewal, and you are trying to decide what you are going to do. What options do you have? How do you think this through? James Laird is RateHub.ca's co-CEO and president of CanWise Mortgage Lender. He's going to be here to talk about that process and how to navigate it. If you aren't up for renewal, you may still want to consider refinancing your mortgage. A lot of people are trying to unlock equity in these high inflation times. There are some pros, there are some cons to this process. Frances Inojosa is a mortgage broker and CEO at Tribe Financial. She's going to tell us more about the strategy and some things to think about before you pursue it. Then, you probably know someone who buries their head in the sand when it comes to money. It could even be you, despite the fact that you're listening to this show. So why is that? Why do we do that? Behavioral science consultant and researcher Yuval Aberman has some insight on this question. He's here to talk about what his research has found and what we can learn from it. Plus, Becky Western McFadden is here to talk about financial coaching, and a program that Credit Canada offers. Scholarships available, so it doesn't cost you any money, but it is a program designed to help you reduce debt and get your financial life back on track. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country, and Spurgel licensed insolvency trustees specializing in bankruptcy, consumer proposals, and debt relief. Let's get started. Millions of Canadians have a mortgage on their home, and some bought years and years ago and have seen a big jump in their wealth on paper. Some bought more recently, and they are incredibly stressed about how much they're going to have to pay in any given month to carry that mortgage. Whatever the circumstances, the thought or the question about refinancing may be on your mind. So we're going to talk about some of the options. We're going to talk about some of the pros and cons. Frances Inojosa is founding partner and CEO of Tribe Financial, a mortgage broker. She is based in Oakville, Ontario. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. How are you today?
I am well. When you use the word refinance, what do you mean?
Well, when we use the word refinance, what we mean is that you're going to be doing changes to your mortgage. And what those changes entail would be either you are increasing the mortgage amount, so you're taking equity out, or you're doing material changes, let's say, to the amortization of the mortgage, the length of time that you've agreed to pay back the bank for that particular debt.
What would be some reasons why you would want to take equity out of your home? And I referenced someone could have had that home for decades and they've built up a tremendous amount of equity. So what might they want to do with that?
Well, the number one reason that we're seeing recently today is to improve their cash flow. So i.e. debt consolidation. With these high inflationary times, people are feeling the pinch right now. Things are costing more at the store. And, you know, those monthly payments that they may have been making on, let's say, that HELOC with the interest-only payment, well, now that interest has gone up significantly. Or, you know, the payments that they're paying on their other debts are impeding on their overall cash flow. So debt consolidation, we're finding, is the number one reason that most individuals now are refinancing their mortgage to overall improve their financial position.
Now, in a recent blog post, you referenced refinancing as a way to, quote, free up cash for decorating and entertaining. Did you have ChatGPT write that blog post or a teenager?
No.
Where on earth did that sentence come from?
No,
I'm getting all finger waggy with you on that. What did you mean?
Get finger waggy on that. And you know what? There's more context to that. So home improvements, okay? That was the actual word that was used in there, was home improvements. And another popular thing that we're seeing today, again, because we're finding that people are finding the pinch when it comes to their mortgage payments and the overall cash flow. Home improvements, we're finding people are actually putting in basement rental suites into their properties. There was a recent report that was actually done by REMAX that's becoming more and more popular, even with people purchasing right now. So people are realizing that they have a lot of space that is being underutilized, and they're finding ways that, you know what, hey, maybe I could renovate my basement, create a separate entrance, create additional income coming into my property, and again, improve the cash flow position, or also help to pay off my mortgage faster. So
I am willing to accept those two reasons. Decorating for pleasure, I won't accept.
Not right now, but home improvements could also be life situations, Bruce. We've also seen, you know, aging populations.
Yeah.
People don't want to
step in leave. Shower, grab bars.
Correct. Right. They don't want to necessarily leave that property. You know, there are a lot of Canadians that have their houses actually paid off right now, but they love their home. There's memories that are there. They've been there for 30 years. They don't want to leave that property. So they're retrofitting it in a way that they can enjoy even into their, you know, elder years and not have to change their lifestyle. So it's not
tell us about,
you know, not
tell us about reason number two. You were talking about amortization. What did you mean there?
What we meant by there is we're finding again, you know, there are, as you know, so many mortgages coming up for renewal in the next year. And what we're finding is individuals are looking at those renewal payments. You know, if rates don't normalize next year, the fact of the reality is most Canadians are going to see their renewal rates be a lot higher than what their current mortgage rates are right now. So what, you know, individuals are looking at is how can I, in my current life stage, maintain my current cash flow? And one of the ways is by increasing the amortization. So, you know, you might be in a life stage right now where you know your income's going to change maybe in the next decade. But in the meantime, you want that lower payment because interest rates are high. So extending the amortization back out is another strategy people are doing. When you do that at renewal, that is considered a refinance. It's not considered a renewal.
Right. Gotcha. Let's talk a bit about timing, because there are a number of factors to consider whether or not you choose to refinance. Among them, whether or not you're refinancing a variable or a fixed, because the penalties can be dramatically different. So what advice do you have for people on when they should do this?
You know, when you should do this first, before you pull the trigger on it, you should be sitting down, obviously, with a mortgage professional, going through all the pros and cons, analyzing the numbers. Does it even make sense to be breaking your mortgage midterm? What is the cost savings if you were to pay a penalty? Is there a cost savings? That's number one. I wouldn't recommend that someone breaks their mortgage if they're not ultimately saving money at the end of the day, because that's just, you know, that's just a fool's plan to do. So run the numbers and see, okay, is there a penalty? What would that cost be? Where am I saving money in this down the road? And how is this improving my overall cash flow and interest savings?
As you sit on the other side of the desk, I'm sure you have clients in front of you who are wanting to refinance because they want to consolidate debt, which seems great at the surface, right? They go from whatever crazy nuts level they're paying on a credit card to a much lower level on a mortgage. But it may be that that doesn't address a fundamental issue in terms of the relationship between revenue and expenses. What do you say to people who are using their home as an ATM?
Have you created a household budget? Have you created a plan? You know, a good mortgage professional is not just going to talk about the mortgage itself and the interest rate and the end payment. They're going to talk about how does that factor into your overall lifestyle? You know, we don't want our clients getting back into the same situation again, sort of wiping the slate, you know, slate clean and then starting again to rack up those debts. Like having that holistic point of view saying, okay, great. Now I've improved my cash flow. Where can I use that extra cash flow in my lifestyle? Right. Is there then at that point, should I be putting money away to save? Absolutely. Can I top up my RSP? So I wouldn't be going in blindly to refinance your mortgage. I would be including it into an overall household plan to make sure that you're not going to be in that situation again in a couple of years' time.
One of the questions that I endeavor to ask every time I'm talking to any professional in the financial space is how they are compensated, because I want to make sure that clients have transparency about what might influence a recommendation on the part of a financial advisor, a mortgage broker, whomever. How does comp work in a refinance? So is a mortgage broker, the lower integrity ones, are they incented to push for a refinance in order to drive a commission, or is it a wash?
Possibly, yes. I mean, if a mortgage broker is suggesting for you to do refinance without putting in context of how that's going to improve you as the client and your overall financial position, then you may want to look at getting a second opinion. It should always be in the benefit of yourself. You should be rushing into a refinance because that is a trendy thing to do. It's not a one size fits all. It's how is this going to impact me and my overall cash flow? Does this make sense with my plan today? And how is this going to set me straight on my goals moving forward? Not just rolling in a credit card into it just because that may not be the right fit for you. Brokers are compensated for refinances just the same as they are in a new purchase. And it's not to say that, you know, like you said, Bruce, maybe the lower ones there that don't have the integrity may be pushing for it. But if your gut, I always say, trust your gut when it comes to financial decisions. If something doesn't sit right with you or they're not explaining it in the purpose of serving you and how it's going to benefit you long term, to me, that is a signal that, you know what, reach out to a professional mortgage broker, get another second opinion on this mortgage. You don't have to make a decision if it doesn't feel right. You could stick to where you are, but always get that second opinion if the first opinion doesn't feel right.
One of the big things, whether you're getting a new mortgage, you're renewing, or you're refinancing, one of the big things is your credit score. So as people are thinking about this question, any of those three scenarios that I just mentioned, what do they need to be doing now in order to set themselves up so that they're going to get the best available rate, the best available options, regardless of which of those three is ahead of them?
Check your credit score. I think that's the number one thing. Most consumers are not aware what their credit scores are. Don't assume just because you're making the minimum payment that you have an excellent credit score. That may not be the case. Debt utilization, high utilization of debt has a major impact on your credit score at the end of the day. We have seen individuals that are professionals, make good money, make their minimum payments on time, but because they're at the upper limits of their credit limits or even over the limits, their credit score now is shot and it's a lot lower. That will affect your renewal options that are out there. One of the main things that most financial institutions look for when they're qualifying you for a mortgage, affordability and your income is number one, but the other two leading factor in determining products and interest rates is credit score. Some of the top tier products that are out there or the preferred interest rates require a consumer to have a 680 credit score or above. Make sure that your credit score is in line. And if it isn't, again, reach out to a mortgage professional to strategize well in advance of how, what you can do to improve that credit score. So you are armed with the best credit score when your mortgage comes up for renewal or you need to refinance.
One last question. There are some listeners who are really holding out hope that a refinance could alleviate cash flow strain, that could enable them to unlock cash for home repairs or whatever it is. What would you say that are the, some of the most common misperceptions that get in the way of that fantasy that people may have that this is the answer, I'm just going to refinance my house?
You know what, again, not understanding their monthly cash flow of what is comfortable for them, doing a deeper dive. Again, that's not a one size fits all when it comes to the energy of your money or the use of your money. Everyone has different wants and needs. So understanding that, understanding the difference between wants and needs is a big thing as well. Credit score is ultimately also the biggest thing. I find a lot of Canadians are not fully versed on the credit score or how their credit impacts them. So being educated and not being afraid to have the conversation. You know, when rates were, you know, super low and, you know, the times are great, it is a lot easier, obviously, to qualify for a mortgage. So plan well in advance. If this is something that you're thinking of doing down the road, start having the conversations today. There's nothing wrong in discussing this with a mortgage professional a year in advance, 6 months in advance, even 2 years in advance. Start creating the plans and the milestones that you need to do. I think as a society, we sometimes get caught up in the instant gratification or instant of getting things done very quick and very fast. There's nothing wrong with slow and steady and planning ahead of time because that's where you're going to have the best financial success overall.
Frances, thanks for your time and for your insight today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Bruce. Always a pleasure.
Frances Hinojosa is founding partner and CEO of Tribe Financial. She joined us to give us some tips on the idea, the opportunity, some of the pitfalls of refinancing your mortgage. Well, stay with us. Coming up next on Moolala, if your mortgage is up for renewal, so maybe you're not ready to refinance, maybe it's time, you got to renew. James Laird from RateHub.ca is going to be here to go over some strategies to help you with that particular part of the process. And later, why do you turn a blind eye when it comes to financial matters? Yes, I'm looking at you, because we all do it. Behavioral science researcher Yuval Aberman has some answers on that front. He's here to talk about that. And get inspired to get a better handle on your money by signing up for the Moolala newsletter. So it comes once a month. We never do anything with your email address other than send you a newsletter once a month. And it includes links to what we do on this show, on SiriusXM, to CityLine, CBC Radio, all that stuff. Go to moolala.ca.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Welcome back. Moolala, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. Carrying a mortgage on your home it's a big deal. It can be a real financial pressure. And there has been so much going on interest rates over the last couple of years that the renewal process feels especially fraught, but maybe it doesn't have to be. So we're going to spend some time looking at the who, what, when, where, why, and how of the referral process with James Laird. He is the co-CEO of RateHub.ca. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce.
I've had a mortgage for, I don't know, a couple of decades. So I've been through this process a number of times. Where does one start? I mean, many people know, like, this is going to happen. It's going to happen maybe in the next 3 months, maybe in the next 12 months. It's going to happen. Where does the process begin, in your view?
I think it begins with educating yourself. If it's your first renewal, you want to make sure that you're clear that you're essentially a free agent in sports, where your contract is up with your current team. So you could stick with that team, but you can also go and listen to offers from other teams. So it's an opportunity for you to shop around and compare what the best rate and option for you is out there. And of course, give your existing lender a shot as well. So I think it starts with educating yourself as to, you know, what is this process and what are my options? What are my rights?
RateHub compares rates. It's what you do. Like, it's not only what you do, but it's what you do. What would you say to provide people with some context on just how important that is? Because they may be like, it's 10 basis points. I love my banker. What's the big deal? You and I would probably agree. It's a really big deal. But how would you dimensionalize that for people?
It's a huge deal. It's really one of the reasons why banks still have posted rates versus the rate you actually get. It gives them pricing discrimination, so that if you just, you know, sign that renewal letter the first time it comes in, that is going to be at a higher rate than is market, and then you could get from another lender or even from that lender if you kick up a bit of a fuss. So your existing lender absolutely is trying to get you to renew at, you know, something a little higher than market or a lot higher than market. So it's a little frustrating that if you say, oh, I'm just going to be loyal, I trust these, you know, trust my current lender, we have a great relationship, that is going to cost you money. So unfortunately, you do have to put in some elbow grease.
Yeah.
And again, regardless of whether you stick with them or go with a different lender, you do need to kick up a bit of a fuss, shop around, get quotes, educate yourself as to what rates are available for your existing situation.
Now, there is a readiness phase for this renewal. In a perfect world, what are all the things that one can do to improve the success of getting the best possible rate? So, you know, the first thing I can think of, but I know it's not the only one, is the prettiest, nicest, most beautiful credit score you could ever hope to have. So maybe if we start there, but then include what else you do to ensure that that application will be well received.
Yeah, it's not different than when you got the mortgage initially. So it's credit score, it's household income versus expenses, and then it's equity in the property. Those are the ways we judge a mortgage, whether it's when you first purchase the home or at renewal. Now, chances are if you qualified for your mortgage initially when you purchased the property, unless something dramatic has happened in your financial life, you know, the most obvious example would be you had a job and now you don't, or maybe there was two household incomes, now there's one, or you got a little carried away and bought too fancy of a car. Mm-hmm. So unless your income to expense ratio has changed significantly in the household, you should start by probably thinking, I can probably qualify with any lender out there.
Some of our listeners will hear this conversation seconds after it first airs. Others may be listening to it, I don't know, 6 or 12 months down the road. What advice do you have on the fixed versus variable decision that stands the test of time? Because obviously there's huge things that are going on in the week, the month, when that decision actually has to be made. But what would you say that would extend and be useful over longer periods of time?
In fact, the only advice I would ever give is over longer periods of time, because I think that anyone thinking they can time or guess rates is probably lying to you. So, you know, or they should just be trading bonds and making $1 million a day. If they can do that, that's what they should do. So the decision between fixed and variable, I think, is really based on the household and the consumers first, not the rate environment. So to consider a variable rate, you need to have financial flexibility in the household. You need to have much more buffer income, because a variable by definition, it can change. And these last 2 years highlight exactly what can happen sometimes with variable rates. They can go up. They don't always go down. I guess, you know, at the moment, most experts are saying that rates are expected to come down. But 2 years ago, most experts were saying, and our central bank was saying, rates are going to stay low for a long time. Mm. That didn't turn out to be true. We're always one unknown event away from whatever we currently think dramatically changing. So thinking you know what's going to happen with rates is a hazardous thing to do. So you go with, what type of risk can my household handle? And if the household can handle more risk, meaning you've got some extra income, then you start thinking, okay, maybe I should consider the variable. And the second test is, will I be comfortable in a variable rate? Am I going to wake up nervous every morning, scanning the headlines, wondering what's happening with inflation, GDP, all these things. So you have to be someone who's comfortable with risk and uncertainty not bothering you. And if you're not that person, do yourself a favor and just take a fixed rate, because if you're just going to stay up at night, and quite frankly, you'll probably end up converting to a fixed rate based on some headline that you read sometime into the future. So you really need to be a risk neutral person who's got some extra income floating around to think about the variable rate. Now, if you are that person, you know, variables historically have done well. And the reason for that is through down rate environments, flat rate environments, up rate environments, you are paying a little bit of a premium to pass along the interest rate risk to somebody else in a fixed rate. That's what it is. It's a little insurance policy, and they take a little bit extra because they're guaranteeing you. So you should, it's not much, but there's something in there that for the the pay to guarantee your rate for a term.
One other dynamic on fixed variable is there is a huge difference in terms of the penalty. So if you're on a variable, it's whatever, it's a couple months interest. If it's a fixed, it can be the price of a car. How do you think about that and factor in the thought that you may move to another city? You might rent, you might, you know, have a marital breakdown. Like, I don't know. How do you factor that in? Because I think people underappreciate the dollars involved of the penalty on breaking a fixed.
Yeah, it's a good point, Bruce. I'm glad you brought it up. The more uncertainty there is in your life, or maybe there is certainty that something could happen soon. You brought up some examples of changing jobs, if you're moving out of the country, of course, relationships either forming or dissolving often cause changes in real estate. There is a big difference in the penalty. The variable rate is always and only 3 months of interest. So in all environments, that is not that obnoxious of a calculation. The fixed rate has an additional test called interest rate differential, and it's the higher of the two. So it's the higher of 3 months of interest or interest rate differential. Interest rate differential becomes a factor when the current market rates are lower than the rate you have in your mortgage. If they're the same or higher, the interest rate differential calculation produces no penalty, and the penalty is simply 3 months of interest. But when rates drop dramatically, there is a big difference between the current market rates and the rates that you're paying. And so there's a calculation. So if you have 4% and the current rates are 2%, that's 2% less. And then you multiply it by your outstanding balance and the number of years remaining, which can become the price of a car. That is something to consider. And you know, we're often surprised by things that come up in our life that we didn't think were going to happen when we get that mortgage. The data backs it up as well. Even though most people in Canada take a 5-year fixed or variable, the average mortgage lasts in this country about 3.6 to 3.7 years, which shows you that this type of thing happens much more often than people initially plan on it happening.
I want to sneak in two questions before we go. How do you guide people on assessing the features out there, like payment vacation, lump sum privileges, all those? Because it seems like the more features you add, like anything, the more features you have, the higher the price you will pay. How do you determine which ones are like, yeah, actually, I really do need that versus it's going to up the cost for me?
I really lump them into two categories. There's mortgages we refer to as full feature, meaning they have the regular prepayment privileges, so the ability to make extra payments. You can break them if you need to and pay a penalty, versus no frills mortgages. And so there's really two broad categories, because within the full feature, there's slight differences, but they're probably going to work for most people. So, you know, one lender might offer a 15% prepayment privilege. One might be 20. In either case, you're probably going to be okay, unless you, you know, have a gangbusters year at work or whatever. But then there are no frills mortgages, which really reduce your ability to pay early or break the mortgage. Some don't allow you to break at all. So you just want to understand what type of, broadly speaking, mortgage am I getting? Because then I find the differences between the two are minor, and most people probably won't notice if they're in a full feature product. It's probably going to be okay.
There are Canadians who will embark on this renewal process. They will do the math with a mortgage professional, and it will be clear either that they can't afford it or that it's a squeaker. And they really are setting themselves up for a really risky period of a couple of years in terms of their ability to make that payment. What questions, tough questions, would you have them ask themselves now if this is the reality they face?
And I think, Bruce, you do want to get on it early. So no matter when your mortgage renewal is, you can open up a payment calculator and figure out what your payment is going to be. And then you've got to look at the household budget and figure out, okay, how are we going to make this payment? What are we going to cut back on? Because it's going to be something. Ideally, it's just the amount you're saving every month, meaning there's extra money in the household. But that's what we're finding right now, is that unless the income situation, unless someone's lost their job, we're finding household budgets are squeezed, you know, meaning less eating, drinking, extracurriculars, less of those nice to have things, important things that we all really value and enjoy. But unless someone's lost their job, there is the ability to make this mortgage payment. It's painful. But you know what gives me peace of mind is we have had the stress test now for years. So even though people have been paying a lot less, they were stress tested at, you know, 5% or higher. So the money should be there, although difficult trade-offs and decisions are being made. So you need to understand where's the money for this higher payment going to come from.
James, thanks for your insight. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for having me, Bruce.
James Laird, co-CEO of RateHub.ca, on some things you want to be keeping in mind as you head into your mortgage renewal.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later, why we turn a blind eye to our money. We do this. We wish we didn't, but we do. We put our hands over our ears. We hum loudly to ourselves and we say, la, 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 I'm not listening. I'm not listening. Behavioral science researcher Yuval Aberman is here to talk about what's going on in our brain that has us do that so often. But first, Becky Western McFadden is here. She's going to talk about Credit Canada Gold, which is a financial coaching program designed to help people get out of debt. The results are through the roof in terms of debt reduction and credit score improvement. She's going to be here to tell us how it works. If you liked what you heard today, and I hope you did, you're still listening, make sure you never miss an episode. And how you do that is to, one of two things, go to moolala.ca and you can listen to all the past episodes. And you can also go to any of the podcast platforms. So that's Spotify, Amazon Prime, you know, Apple Music, wherever, and subscribe. You just hit the subscribe button and then the podcast just shows up in your phone or wherever it is that you learn to listen to podcasts.
We all believe in the possibilities of tomorrow. And at Easy Financial, we're here to help you every step of the way. If the banks aren't an option, we can help get you approved for a loan in as little as 10 minutes. And with our personal, home equity, and auto loans, you can choose the loan that's right for you, so you can start rebuilding your credit for a better tomorrow. Apply today without affecting your credit score at easyfinancial.com or at over 400 locations and find out how much you can qualify for. Easy Financial. Better tomorrows.
Sports coach, nutrition coach, life coach, executive coach. Coaching is a really big idea here. Look at almost any area of life and people are jazzed about the coaches that they work with to improve in that particular area. One, which is pretty, it's pretty close to home for us, is financial coaching. And today we're going to talk about what financial coaching is and a program that Credit Canada offers called Credit Canada Gold. Joining us now is Becky Western McFadden. She is the financial coaching manager at Credit Canada, and she's in St. Catharines, Ontario. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce.
Okay, so the admission, I think, for all of our listeners should be that you and I have been working on financial coaching and financial coaching programs for coming up on 2 years. So to say this is a passion project for both of us would be the understatement of the century. Is that fair?
Yes, this is totally a dream come true.
That is fair. It's a dream come true for both of us to work on this stuff. Let's start with the definition. When we talk about financial coaching, what do we mean?
Financial coaching is a holistic approach to help people transform their financial situation. it's different from traditional counseling, because in counseling, the value is in the advice. You're given all the ideas and options that you need to make a decision. Different from a financial coaching program where the value is in the result. So to use a sports reference here, the coach of the national hockey team is not there to give advice to her team. She's paid to have them win. That gives her a lot of latitude in the terms of the drills she assigns and how the players think about motivation, nutrition, sleep, and then she works with them over a longer period of time. So that applies to our financial coaching program. We don't just think about budgeting. We're talking about job searches and talking about money with family and addressing even mental health issues. So that means the program is unfolding over time.
Tell us about the why. So as I mentioned off the top, you and I have been working on this for almost 2 years. Why? What had this be a priority for Credit Canada?
We knew Canadians need this. We know there's more that we need to do to support people out there in getting out of debt and keep them out of debt. Financial coaching helps them learn those key financial concepts, but even more importantly, it helps them develop a sense of accountability for their financial life. And we're the experts at that, right? So we've been in the world of credit counseling for over 57 years. So we
not you are, and I. I mean, you and I aren't a day over 37, but the agency has been around. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So as such, Credit Canada is the experts on supporting individuals struggling with debt and their financial well-being. And over that time, you know, we have certainly learned with all our experience that there can be a major impact for individuals who have access to financial coaching experience.
Let's talk about the who, what, when, where, how of the program design. So it's called Credit Canada Gold. It has a bunch of components. It's not just a classroom session. Take us through the specifics.
I'd love to. It's certainly not a one and done experience. So the Gold program has 6 virtual classes. There's one a week for 2 hours each. And we include a lot of topics in those classes, like you'd expect, like, you know, budgeting and credit scores. But we also talk about other concepts like the purpose of money and understanding root causes of why participants are having a hard time. We talk about mental health issues, addictions, job loss, divorce. All of that is part of that experience.
A real community feel to it. Tell us about the community dynamic that gets created.
We focus on building that supportive, confidential community. There's no shame, there's no judgment, and there's lots of support. Now, each participant is actually assigned to a coach. So part of that experience is they receive a private 30-minute coaching call each week for 5 weeks. And that's the one-on-one experience of the program. The other element is that we actually partner everybody up as an accountability buddy. So an accountability buddy checks in with their partner just to see how they're doing with homework and any struggles they might be having, and even sharing some of the wins or insights that they're experiencing.
Homework? What do you mean homework? What kind of homework is required? And how long does it take?
The homework can take anywhere from about half an hour to an hour each week, depending how prepared you are coming to class. So the homework can be things like starting to gather your numbers around what your income is and what your expenses are and what your assets are. But the homework is also not just about numbers. It can be intangible things such as talking to somebody about money in your life or starting to work on some of the root causes that you've identified.
Who would you say the Credit Canada Gold program is best was developed for? I mean, if you've got $5 million in cash sitting in the bank and you're spending the winter in the Bahamas, this is probably not the program for you.
Right. That's a little bit beyond the scope of this program. So we are looking at the basics. And although we think every Canadian would benefit from this program is developed for individuals who are dealing with more consumer debt than they can manage. And that's things like credit cards and loans, lines of credit. And they're also willing and ready to be coachable. So therefore would benefit from new skills and making additional support or having additional support to make the progress they need to make.
How much does it cost? I mean, I know the answer to this, but I think our listeners would want to know too.
Yeah, for our participants, there is no cost. It is a sponsored program, which means we are receiving sponsorships from our generous donors to allow our participants to have that seat.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Everyone who's admitted into the Credit Canada Gold program receives a scholarship. So it's like, it's a $1,500 program in which they don't have to pay a penny, which is pretty spectacular. You and I have been in the room with these participants for a long time now, but I'd love it if you gave our listeners a bit of context in terms of the benefits that participants would describe, both in like dollars and cents, and also in terms of how it makes them feel.
Absolutely. So we do think about those benefits as numbers and words. So the numbers, what we've seen is after 3 months of being in the program, the average debt reduction is about $6,400 per person. That Wow. represents an average reduction of 19% of debt, which is phenomenal. And that's debt that would not have gone away if they weren't taking actions that they took within the program. We also see a lift in credit scores. So on average, we're seeing an improvement of about 4%, which is impressive considering that scores take a while usually to start shifting.
What about words? What would they say? Can you give us an example of a participant who described their benefit that may transcend numbers?
Sure. So beyond the numbers of changing, you know, what they're paying in interest rates and how much debt they've paid down, some of the things we've heard, I'll give you a couple of quotes. One is, my proudest accomplishment is being able to talk about finances with my husband and still leave the conversation happy with each other. Right. We are now trying to have a weekly date when we discuss our finances. And I have one other, which is my absolute favorite that just came in recently from one of our participants. The program made me take a good look at my spending and make changes. I decided to sell an expensive trailer I was still paying for. The advice of my coach was vital in making me get rid of that frivolous debt. I launched a new product for my business and started to invest my excess money in saving, even for a vacation with my family. One of my goals was to manage my money to actually have time with my family. This course taught me to be more aware of my financial resources and stay out of debt.
Nice. And we have the pleasure and privilege of keeping in touch with people over the course of many months and now years, and can see the cumulative benefits that they report. Now, Credit Canada, in a partnership with Capital One, is offering female-only cohorts, a cohort being like a group of people who participate in the program together. Why female-only? What's different in that program versus if it was open to anybody?
Lived experience plays a major role in our relationship with money and how we behave with money. By having these specialized cohorts, we can actually, first of all, provide a safe space for participants to talk about their shared lived experience. And secondly, focus on what collective support they might need in that cohort. So that's really important to be able to design it that way.
Yeah. Now, hopefully people's interest is piqued here. So where can they find out more? How do they find out more about Credit Canada Gold?
I'm excited to share this. They can actually go to our landing page for it at www.creditcanada.com/gold to access more information and access the application form to apply for our January program.
I love that you use www there.
No one does that anymore.
Very 2004 reference. Yeah. I think people know that they can go to creditcanada.com, teasing you, creditcanada.com/gold. And we offer these programs throughout the year, but get moving, go to that website, check it out, and apply. Thank you very much, Becky.
Thanks, Bruce.
Becky Western McFadden is the financial coaching manager for Credit Canada. She was here to talk about Credit Canada Gold, which is a pretty extraordinary, innovative financial coaching program that really brings a holistic approach to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Coming up, are you one of those people who shies away from dealing with your financial matters? You can't be like totally like that if you're listening to this program, this radio show, but certainly there are reasons why we do this. And we're going to talk to a behavioral science researcher about why it is that we hide our head in the sand, why it is that we pretend to be an ostrich. Yuval Aberman will be our guest. I'm also the money columnist for CBC Radio. And so if you tune in Wednesday afternoons, I talk about all sorts of things, any personal finance topic that is relevant to you and your financial life. So tune in Wednesday afternoons on the Drive Home shows across Canada. Moolala is brought to you in part by Spurgel Licensed Insolvency Trustees, specializing in bankruptcy, consumer proposals, and debt relief. For 30 years, the team at Spurgel has helped over 100,000 people. That's a lot of people. 100,000 people discover how good it feels to be debt-free. Their personalized approach helps Canadians reclaim their lives without the crushing weight of past debt. You can contact a licensed insolvency trustee at Spurgel to help you get a financial fresh start. You owe it to yourself. Spurgel.ca. That is Spergel.ca. Human beings are very good at many, many, many things. We invented French fries, air travel, The Amazing Race Canada, the best show on television. But we are also bad at many things. Taking care of the planet, not so good at. Not eating too many French fries, we're not so good at that. And sometimes we're not so good at addressing financial issues. It is not always easy to spring into action and do the thing we need to do to get a handle on our money. Why is that? Why do we do that? Why is that such a universal predicament? Yuval Aberman is a behavioral science consultant and researcher based in Toronto. He has written on this very question, and he joins us now to talk about some of what he has learned. Hello there.
Hello there, Bruce. Great being here.
Why do we bury our head in the sands? Why do we turn a blind eye? Whatever analogy, metaphor, reference we want to make, our listeners are all nodding because they all know that they do this. We do. I do this. Why?
Right. It's really peculiar, isn't it? Like the fact that we are generally really motivated to improve our finances, but then we also do things that prevent us from improving our financial situation. So there are a number of biases or patterns of thinking that can lead us to be less than perfect when it comes to our financial matter. So a primary reason that we avoid personal financial matters is that thinking about money can be quite stressful, right? And something very interesting about our psychology is that when we encounter uncomfortable thoughts, there are certain coping mechanisms, strategies we can take to shield us from these uncomfortable thoughts. For example, one of them is what's termed the ostrich effect. So one way that we can deal with uncomfortable thoughts about money, about how finances are going to work out and things like that, is to pretend like they don't exist at all, right? As you've mentioned, this behavior is not limited to our finances. Like you might try to manage your weight, but then avoid stepping on a scale altogether. Or you might experience some scary health symptoms, but refuse to get tested for them, not wanting to hear about the uncomfortable thoughts. So similarly, we have this tendency when it comes to our finances that when things are actually not going so well, we tend to not realize it. Or there's a behavioral researchers identified that during market downturns, people tend to check their investment portfolios less, for example. And this was what was termed the ostrich effect, which stems from the mistaken belief that ostriches bury their heads in the sand when sensing danger.
Right. It's a great visual cue, whether it's accurate or not. Mm-hmm. How does this connect to our optimism or lack thereof?
Right. So one way that we can also deal with uncomfortable thoughts is to replace an uncomfortable thought with a more optimistic one, right? It's optimism bias is a fascinating cognitive tendency that we all have, the belief that things will turn out better than they might realistically be. So instead of pretending like the problem is not there, we might just present a rosier picture of what really is happening. So we can downplay our current financial situation, attributed to things that are beyond our control. We might say, oh, the economy is really bad. It's not that I'm making bad financial decisions. Or we might hear about the risks that are associated with a certain investment or other financial choices that people make, like, for example, living beyond our means. And we might tell to ourselves that, oh, it might be true to some other people, but I am not going to run into this problem. It's not relevant to me. Something will work out. And optimism is great often, you know, but it is often clouds our judgment and affects our financial choices.
I often refer to my own diluted optimism, like, you know, colds take care of themselves. Burning houses will just, I don't know, water will fall from the sky and put out the fire. There is a real difference in terms of how how these biases play out for individuals. What drives that? What has this be unique to every individual on this foundation of what we understand about human beings universally?
First of all, I don't know what to say if there is something truly unique about this optimism. I think what, as you suggest, like, great optimism can be really wonderful many times. But there's also, you know, we also know from the research that people who experience a lot of financial optimism are less likely, for example, to seek financial advice or see it as valuable. Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting. But
interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
I would have thought, for me, because I'm such an optimist, that I would have just done all the right things because the world always works out for me. But you're saying I may be an outlier or even more deluded than I admit to.
Both are possibilities. Now, yeah, I do also want to suggest, though, that in addition to the kind of the fact that we're saying that thinking about financial situation can be stressful, there are a lot of times where we are interested in improving our situation. So we do take in this information from the outside world. And yet, there's also the fact that we are not exactly wired to understand financial situation and information very well. So there's a lot of cognitive biases that happen that prevents us from even acknowledging the reality or making good decisions when we compare two different investment choices, for example. Mm.
You've written about something called the magical penny. Is it the magical penny? What's that?
Right. So I brought up, it's a classic example that I brought up in this piece that we discussed, that it's pretty much a very simple thought experiment. So imagine choosing between an immediate payment of $1 million or a penny that doubles daily for 30 days. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the immediate.
Easy, $1 million today.
Right.
Easy, done. No question.
Absolutely. The immediate million seems really appealing. And waiting for the penny to double is quite frustrating, right? Even though the latter would mean that you would get $5 million in your bank account in a month.
What?
Right. So I'm sure that if I told you you want a $1 million now or $5 million in a month, you would choose $5 million. You can wait a month for that amount of money. And so this thought experiment demonstrates the wonders of compounding. I know many of your listeners are familiar. I know you've been talking about compounding.
Yeah,
but the point is that understanding the basic of compounding interest does not shield us from miscalculating how powerful compounding can be, right? People generally exhibit the exponential growth bias or the tendency to neglect compounding when considering financial options. So people might overlook the impact of interest rates on a shiny new credit card when they see a low annual fee or a very generous welcome bonus. It's common not to grasp how a few extra percentage points in annual interest can translate into a substantial financial burden over time. I think a lot of people see this now with the rising interest rate in the housing market, where a seemingly low percentage point increase does translate to hundreds of dollars, at least, for each mortgage payment for people.
So we have this level of awareness. We hide our head in the sand because money is stressful. Money is complicated. We have a number of biases, and we've, you know, given some examples here. I'm sure there are many more. What else does one do about this?
Hmm. Yeah, well, I think one really important thing is first to acknowledge and be aware of all of these biases, because understanding that we do those things can really help us shield us from it in the future. So when we grasp the underlying reasons behind our behaviors, we gain insight into how to confront them. When we recognize the biases, like the ones we discussed, we can notice them next time that it happens. When you bury you find sand all over you because your head is in the sand, you might realize, hey, why am I tasting sand in my mouth?
Right. one other reference point that I think is helpful here is the marshmallow test, which, if it's what I think it is, one that we talked about with kids a lot around delayed gratification. Am I referring to the correct test? And if so, how does it apply here?
Definitely. Right. So the marshmallow test is a really classic study from psychology. It was originally experimented with kids indeed. So kids would be going to a research lab and they would be offered a choice between eating a marshmallow immediately or waiting for a short period of time. After which they will receive two marshmallows as a reward. So you can see similarity between what we're saying with the magical penny, where there's this debate versus taking something now or in the future. But here, it's not really about understanding the complexities of compound interest. It's just stemming from our kind of inherent present bias, or when we focus on the immediate here and now, and less so about what might happen down the line. And what the marshmallow test done wonderfully is connecting between the findings of kids who came to the lab and had to make this choice and their later on outcome in life. So we really see drawing a line connecting between children's original kind of choice about delayed gratification and their long-term outcome later in life. We see that kids were able to delay gratification were later on having better long-term outcomes, including making better financial decisions.
I'm so glad they used a marshmallow and not a chocolate chip cookie, because if I was in that study, there is no way I would have waited for a millisecond on the chocolate chip cookie. Marshmallows, I think I could have waited. I don't know. Very insightful stuff. Yuval, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're more than welcome. It was a pleasure. Really glad.
Yuval Aberman is a behavioral science consultant and researcher based in Toronto. He has written about this question of why is it that we are ostriches, or at least this notion, this myth about ostriches, and some real reasons about how our brain's designed. That's it for our show today. A thanks to our sponsors, Credit Canada, first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country, and Spurgell Licensed Insolvency Trustees, specializing in bankruptcy, consumer proposals, and debt relief. Our address is ask@moolala.ca. If you have comments and questions and stories, story ideas, and anything else you want to reach out to us on, you can send an email to that address, ask@moolala.ca. You can subscribe to our newsletter at moolala.ca. You can subscribe to the podcast on any of the podcast platforms out there. And while you're there, leave us a review. On social media, I'm @BruceCelery on X, Bruce Celery Moolala on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.